Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host this morning. This is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to look at the politics on our dinner plate. As always, I'm joined by my fabulous panel and good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Well, good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
I came across, well, actually, I didn't. My wife came across a story yesterday, and seeing as it's from your backyard, so to speak, it just had me rolling in the aisles laughing. This is off the LA Times website, and it involves the attorney for Dr. Conrad Murray, who Mr. Conrad Murray, of course, is the gentleman responsible for Michael Jackson's death. Anyway, I'll just read the quote. A lawyer for Michael Jackson's personal physician said Wednesday that in light of the uproar surrounding the verdict of the recent Casey Anthony case, jurors in the doctor's upcoming manslaughter trial should be sequestered round the clock, or at least, quote, during the hours Nancy Grace is on TV, end quote.
I love it. I must admit, I missed that one.
Isn't that just priceless?
It's priceless. I love that, Simon.
Yeah, as I said, on the Sunday show, Nancy Grace is going to take a big hit with this because you can only rant and scream so long, and if you're not right, then it comes back to haunt you. And in her case, whether people agree with her, agree with the verdict or not, it turns out she wasn't right. And when you're a lawyer and you start ranting and raving, and I can tell you, that's true when you deal with your own clients, you better make sure you're right because they never forget it when you're wrong. Don't you agree with that, Ashley?
Oh, absolutely.
And one of the bad
you're
parts,
branded.
One of the bad parts about being a lawyer, which I comment to Ashley about all the time, is people quoting you, and it happens to me more than I generally like, and I mean that sincerely. I have people come up and say to me, remember when you said such and such, and I said, well, when did I say that? 6 years ago when we were discussing this. And Ashley does that to me, sadly, a number of times, too.
Only because I'm the wife, I get, I never said that. I'll go, okay, hon, you know how that goes, Simon.
On behalf of all our male listeners, there's certain things you always say to your wife. I never said that, even if you know you did, right, Simon?
I didn't do it, I didn't say it, I wasn't there.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that famous, there's nobody in my bed, honest. So, Simon, that's a great story. Ashley had a great story that come up. We've wanted to talk for a couple of weeks. And this is about this Oak Park couple who live in the city. It's about 10 miles outside of Detroit, Michigan, who decided to put the garden in their front yard. We talked a little about it on one of the other shows and how
I think it was last week we talked about it, because
yeah,
I'm excited about the news.
Yeah. So briefly, as we talked about before, the local government decided they didn't like their garden, and they cited them. And, of course, it became a big fight. They refused to pay the ticket, and so it's become a court case. And now they're talking about moving it to another county, much like the Casey Anthony type thing, because they can't get a fair trial in that. So then they put up a Facebook account, and they started running a Facebook thing for people to complain about how they were being treated.
And there's comments from around the world. Yesterday there were comments on her site from Holland, and people. The best thing that happened with this is that people are rallying together over these organic gardens, saying, "Wait a minute, I think you have this one wrong."
I
read the story, and I just went, it's not April the 1st. Why is this story running? You know, I mean, it can't be real.
93 days in jail. 93 days in jail for planting a garden in front of your yard.
It's funny because I told someone yesterday, we were talking about that, and I told them how I would never live in a gated community or homeowners association, because who wants to go to meetings about what's involved with your home and all these other things? So here you got someone who buys a house, so they have a right to make their own decisions about what they're doing, and they're plagued with the same type of thing that the average homeowner is plagued when they move into a homeowners association.
Oh, I'm waiting for the SWAT team to arrive, you know, hands away from the vegetables.
It's funny. I think they are, too.
Yeah, but on the July 15th, though, I guess the they did drop the charges on Julie Bass.
Oh, they did.
Right,
oh.
But they hit her with two other misdemeanor crime charges. I think one is a barking dog. I'm not sure, but it's, you know, it's as absurd as the other one. They had to go to the town next door to get it resolved, and the mayor next door apparently stepped in, and somehow it went away, and she showed up to court, and everyone failed to notify her lawyer. Oh, were we surprised about that? And no one would talk about it. So they're waiting to see what happens next to see if they, you know, continue the lawsuit or sue her again.
Well, you know, it's funny. The last case I was involved in, I was asked to do some expert work on a criminal case recently. And as a result, the young lady, who should not have been in jail, she was being persecuted by the prosecution, was made bail. And someone said to me, good, we'll have her out this afternoon. I said, you'll be lucky to get her out next week. It was, Thursday, right, Ashley?
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? I get a phone call that it's now a week later. They had to go back to court, and they bring her in out of jail and shackles. And the judge said, what she's doing here? I granted her bail a week ago. Oh, we lost the papers, we did this or that. So when the prosecution wants to mess with you, they lose your papers, they send it the wrong place, they do this or that. So the poor girl ended up spending 6 more days in jail while they screwed around with her paperwork. So when you get an argument, this was a small jurisdiction around in Orange County with a judge that didn't like this young lady in her early 20s and just ran her around. And it was not a crime of violence or anything. It was a civil issue over did she commit credit card fraud and all the rest. So this poor girl now has spent a month or six weeks in jail trying to get bail because the judge and the prosecutor didn't like her. I mean, that's terrible. So we're going to move over to one of our favorite political topics, and that's GMOs. Genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered food. And for people who aren't aware of it, you know, there's this drought in Africa. And the minute there's a drought in Africa, Monsanto seizes the opportunity to go, aha, we have GM food because we have to feed the world. Well, Kenya is a country that Ash and I follow. I received a request from a young man who leads an anti-GMO group in Nigeria to republish many of the stories on your blogs at Blogger News, Simon. And we granted him this opportunity, and he's been reprinting all these GMO articles in his language as well as English.
Not yours, Simon, the articles that we participated in.
Your article
on
your site.
Yes, we're not getting permission to go through you. Let's go mine Simon here.
Simon, why not? Everyone else minds it.
I
know the only one who isn't stealing your articles is Monsanto, and of course your friends of the Corn Refiners Association. I don't think that she wants your articles. So anyway, make a long story short, you know, they keep us up to date what's going on in Kenya. And by the way, we have people in Poland, Sweden, Pakistan and India received permission to reprint a number of these articles there. So I get this note from him in this little article. So what happened is basically Monsanto and the U.S. government start smuggling in GMO wheat, corn, and soy. So finally the government said, we just can't seem to stop this. So they authorized the importation of GMO wheat, but they put a limitation on it. The GMO wheat could only be used to ground into flour to make bread and other items during the famine, but absolutely no seeds could be allowed, nor could they be, you know, basically planted. And I love the minister there said, we have to stop these unscrupulous traders of GMO wheat. Well, who could that be other than Monsanto and its partners in the U.S. government? They didn't name them by name, but can anyone else think of anyone else who would have the ability to import GMO seeds? And certainly not a local farmer. He gets sued if he touched a seed. So what we have here is this limited time now where they're going to be used there. And they issued this statement saying all flour must be clearly labeled. So in other words, if you make flour out of a GMO wheat or even corn flour, it must be labeled GMO, which is something we can't seem to get done in the United States. And basically, they're trying to stop what they describe as a political interference from the U.S., which, of course, WikiLeaks exposed in Ireland, France, and Spain. So if they would twist and turn Ireland, France, and Spain, God only knows what the U.S. government would do to poor little Nigeria. So, Simon, do you have any thoughts about the battle of the Nigerian government with Monsanto over GMOs?
Yes, but there's something that really, really concerns me. And it has its roots in the Indian farmers crisis. Indian farmers are being forced to pay top dollar for GMO seeds that they do not want. And unless my memory fails me, one of the major issues with GMO seeds is the amount of water that they require. And I've got a feeling that if it's a problem in India, it very likely is a problem in Nigeria, Kenya, and all of those countries. So, bring on the GMO seeds, but guess what? You can't grow them because you don't have enough water to grow the stinking things.
Yeah, that is a problem. And by the way, that's a problem out on the farms. We're all concerned about the quality of water in the United States and the contamination from pool lagoons and all the other things we discuss on this show. So we have GMO plants that use more water than regular plants, which means they get more of this contaminated water from the pool lagoons.
In addition to the fact there's such a problem in South Africa that they had problems reporting of 80% loss in corn production, 80% loss with the GMO. And the GMO or corn would not produce any kernels for the proportion amount of plants that were planted. So they actually had a tremendous loss. But in Tanzania, they warned people in Kenya by saying that this, I love, this is a quote from the Daily News in Kenya from a farmer, Mr. Shaha, regional chairman. And he was saying that there is intense pressure from foreign biotech companies who are paying our scientists very well to support their work and are imposing their agenda on what we should grow and eat. We are one of the many non-GMOs who have seen the fallout from this technology on small farmers and their families in other countries. I urge my fellow Tanzanians beware of the serious risks before it is too late. Now, that appeared in the Daily News in Kenya, which I thought was very, that one really punched me in the nose because it's something we keep saying over and over again, and it's like paying your scientists, imposing your agenda. Does that sound familiar, Manny?
Oh, yeah. Anybody want to guess who might be doing that?
Oh, does it begin with an M?
Yeah, it sure does. And it's funny, you know, DuPont Hybrid also makes genetically modified plants, but so few of them, and they spend half their time not only chasing Monsanto, but suing them lately. In fact, Monsanto is suing them, too, claiming that they've also impinged upon their patents. I'm surprised they haven't sued Obama, but again, they support him financially, and he helps them, so I guess that keeps them from being sued, too. So it's just amazing what they get away with GMO food, which takes us to the next level of GMO food, because one of the things we wanted to talk about was the politics of all this and how they get started. But I want to talk about yeast. Ashley kept sending me these various articles on human-based yeast and how it's going to be horrible. And my initial reaction was, so what, they make the yeast out of all of this. Well, we watched a gentleman who wrote his new book's called Knives and Forks, which is really about avoiding the knives and surgery by using your fork to eat better. And he also wrote the book on the Chinese diet. He's a former head of
the Chinese syndrome.
Chinese syndrome. He's a former head of food chair at Cornell University. And he made an interesting statement. Humans are the only species that drink milk from another species. And that struck me. And he's right. And to a great extent, you know, when Ashley started in on me about how they're using pigs and other things they're going to genetically reap organs and for organ transplants, I started thinking, my God, then we'll be the first species who are using organs as well as drugs made from other animals. And in many respects, it's a form of bestiality. And although that word usually has a negative sexual connotation, I'm not sure that a transgenic joinder of human organs in a pig isn't a form of bestiality. I mean, that's how we got minotaurs, you know. And whether people believe that satyrs, minotaurs, and all these other things in mythology really exist, there's so many articles they probably did. But maybe a minotaur was a transgenic experiment from ancient astronauts. It's as believable as some of the other garbage people talk about in history. So let's talk about yeast, Ashley. Tell us a little bit about the background of how this yeast comes about. You want to tell us about it?
No, you got it covered.
I love it. My wife sends me a long article, rants and raves for months, and then punts when I ask her.
That's right, exactly.
Isn't marriage a grand item, Simon?
I get the same thing on.
You want just a brief description?
No,
I'll give you a brief description. You want a brief description? We got you done here. Okay, fine. It's a fungi, and it has 1,500 species that they've been able to describe of it, and it's yeast is 1% of all the fungal species that are out there.
Fungal species?
Fungal species, meaning or fungus.
Fungus, okay.
It's a fungus, and that's part of the species, and there's 1,500 of them.
Okay.
And then the most important thing about yeast is the fact that it is asexual. That means it can reproduce itself by just dividing or producing buds and repeat, all by itself. So once you have yeast going on, you've got this fungus happening that will sexually take care of itself, and it will repeat and reproduce.
And no Playboy magazines are required.
No, exactly.
That is a good one. Yeah, so at the end of the day, what we have is a situation where yeast, which is used in so many products that, you know, that basically is being reproduced as some type of gene from humans, and they have the nerve to say, when I read it at some length, that, well, you know, it's repeated so often, after a while, it loses its human DNA. If you believe that, I got a bridge for you.
But you're talking about this human-based gelatin, correct?
Right. No, it's the yeast. The yeast is self-reproducing, but they claim it loses its human DNA afterwards. That's like saying that after, you know, five generations, your ultimate great-great-grandchildren lose your DNA. I mean, that is a so unrealistic a statement, it's almost insulting. Go ahead.
Let me ask a stupid, simple question. I am a fan of beer. Good beer is a thing of awe and wonder.
And there are many famous, particularly European brands, that have been using the same culture of yeast for hundreds of years.
Right, it's born in the fermentation process.
Right, and that's what one of the things that, you know, gives that particular beer a very, very unique flavor. It doesn't lose its DNA over time. I'm sure if it lost its DNA, it would lose its flavor.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, Simon, there's 4,000 years right now that archaeologists can date it back where yeast has been used for bread and used for brewing, and it's been 4,000 years that we know of. I mean, it's been around a long time on using this for fermentation.
Well, let's make a literary reference here. Anyone who read Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park, this flies in the face of everything he wrote and everything that geneticists believe. You pull out a little rock of amber, you find a frozen wasp in there, and next thing you know, you got Jurassic Park wandering around eating up everybody in the woods. So they're going to tell me that wasp decays and its basic DNA goes away? Well, I think every test has shown that they find DNA of humans. In fact, one of the important tests to me that is not discussed in the news is a few years ago, a group in Europe ran the DNA on all these archaeological digs and mummies and things, and they determined that the DNA showed that the pool of humans came from generally a group of about 35,000 people who they think survived the Ice Age or were in effect ancient astronauts, however they got here. But the fact remains that it was narrowed down to that group. Well, if DNA is destroyed, how could they sit down and narrow this group down to these low number of people, right, Simon?
Right. It makes no sense. You know,
right.
Stupidity.
But let's talk about the swing site. So here we have yeast that's being duplicated in a lab, created in huge vats for human use. And the high fructose yeast, because it's made the same way maltodextrin, MSG, and all these other things. So in fact, MSG is frequently made from yeast. So quite commonly, the MSG that's in your food that you don't know about.
The yeast extract.
Yeah, and the yeast extract. Well, we'll get to some of those in a moment. Are essentially made from this genetically modified yeast. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy that fills in lots of products. So, you know, now we should probably talk about what those products are. Well, I ran up a quick list without working too hard on yeast. Well, we know basically all your bread has yeast. So if you're buying a loaf of bread, a cheap loaf of bread in the market, it's coming from genetically modified wheat. It rises with genetically modified yeast from human beings, okay? Depending on where it's made, it's got water. So if it's in the Midwest, chances are that tap water is in some way has some level of contamination. And then you put it on your table and go, here, you mean bread makes you sick? You have an allergy to it? Nah, you can't have an allergy. Maybe it's gluten intolerance. Well, maybe some of this gluten intolerance that people are suffering from are really intolerance to the GMO wheat, the yeast is put in, other items. So, Ashley, how do you feel about that bread? You've had experiences where you go out to a restaurant and the bread makes you sick, right?
Well, I never realized until really looking at yeast that they could possibly be yeast, because no one really ever talks about that. It's like, if you heard anybody say, gee, it's the yeast in your bread, you know, but it turns out that there's quite a few allergies, and two causes of the allergy are from you have two, you know, various. Where was I jumping to here? what was your question again? I forgot this morning. Who am I? Where am I?
I thought you were going to tell us about your experience.
Yeah, there we go.
Well,
I would go out to eat, and I would have a slice of bread, and afterwards I would feel real sluggish and wanted to lay down and go to sleep. And I never associated. I thought it was I was having a gluten intolerance or wheat intolerance, and it turns out that it is a yeast intolerance, and that some of that yeast intolerance isn't only due to the fact that it's the yeast, but it's where they're taking the yeast from and how they're producing the yeast. So there's all sorts of different areas you can go with the yeast and allergies, but frequently, if you eat a loaf of bread, you'll get sick. If you eat a slice of bread and you want to fall asleep, frequently that's an allergy to the yeast. So it would be an important issue to get your yeast allergies checked to see if it's allergy to yeast. And no, just put a parameter around it that it might be, you know, strictly the wheat or the barley or the rye or something like that. You need a whole package of allergy checks.
Can I ask a question? And it's way outside of the scope of yeast, or at least I think it is. I like really, really good fresh bread. Mm-hmm. Nothing beats freshly baked bread. But you know what? You've got to eat it within a couple of days, otherwise it's stale, it's icky, you got to throw it away. Now, I can go to my local Mega Mart and buy a sliced white loaf. It seems to last for forever. It's as fresh on day one as it is on, you know, day 14. How do they do that?
Well,
it can't be natural.
No, of course it's not natural. It's just more of these synthetics that we talk about they add to make their food last longer. I don't know what the synthetic du jour is that they put into bread right now. You'd have to look at each label. But we notice that, too. We notice that some breads last dramatically longer than others, and some of them turn green. Some of them just get mushy. And then, again, we talk about such things as Ashley's famous piece of cheese that got to be 10 years old before I threw it out, and she's still angry about me throwing it out because she wishes she had it for the show. But the fact is that even vegetables, we talk about how they spray them with ethylene and they coat them with wax, and Ashley talks about the new BioSafe, which is
antifungal that goes underneath the waxing, so you make sure that, you know, the fruit looks nice and pretty while you're having this antifungal.
Well, one of the things they don't tell Americans is with the increase in the number of farms and other people and places where they can derive food from causes an additional delay in getting that food to market. So if your food is delayed in getting to market, guess what? You've got to do something to make that food live longer, and the way to do it is some type of preservative. But you don't hear any of them voluntarily saying, oh, yeah, we put preservatives in to make sure our food gets to the market on time. But the fact is they do, and it's something that disturbs every restaurant owner I ever talk to also, because they can't tell sometimes where the food comes from. So what happens is you go into one restaurant, and you have bread, and it makes you sick. You go into another restaurant, and you go, I love their bread. And sometimes we listen to people who eat out, and I bet you've had this phase too, Simon, where you were living like in San Diego, and there are places where you just absolutely love their bread. And sometimes you find yourself going back to a restaurant because the bread they serve with their meal is so good, you really like it. You've had that experience, haven't you, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. But not so much restaurants. It would be bakeries.
Yeah.
You buy a loaf of bread. You've never been there before. You get it home. And I'm simple with my bread. Bread, real butter. I'm a happy guy. I may have a small piece of cheese with it. Yeah, that to me is sheer heaven. And yet, you can go to another bakery, which looks good. Product looks the same. You get it home. You try it. It's not as good.
Right.
It's the ingredients.
You know, one of the things I discovered since I've been doing 100% organic, and Manny and I talk about it all the time, I can taste something now, Simon. If it tastes flat, the probability of it being full of genetically engineered everything, including your yeast, which they've genetically engineered whatever to create your yeast, then you have you're eating synthetic. You think you're eating a loaf of bread because it looks like a loaf of bread, it's pretty like a loaf of bread, may even have a slight smell like it, maybe. But it's really a piece of synthetic.
And I'm going to shift and get off topic for just a moment about smells.
I knew you were going to go there.
Ash and I turned on the TV the other day, and they were doing a special on CBS News about how this restaurant, and I believe this one was somewhere outside of Boston, basically was using scents. And they had, like, you know, room, you know, the type you find in a men's room, right? And they're spraying everybody with the smell of broccoli and all this stuff, trying to encourage people to get hungry while they're in the market so they would buy more food. And people going, oh, yeah, what did I smell? Yeah, it did make me want to buy, you know, some kind of food like this. And we're sitting there going, they're using this artificial spray to entice people to eat food, and people aren't saying, oh, my God, I don't want to smell something synthetic like that. Nobody in the group even thought about it. It was like, you know, if you would have said to them, should you be smelling stuff like this? Is that good for your health? They would probably go, I don't know.
They've removed so many enzymes in the process of trying to create this biotech food, and the enzyme is the thing that actually makes this food nutritional. They remove the thing within the thing that removes the smell. So now they're going to have to start using chemicals so that you can continue to trick the brain to say, oh, this fruit and vegetable section smells so good, when in fact it has no smell because they've removed the enzymes that actually or interfere with the enzymes by the amount of bacteria and viruses that they put within those seeds that reproduce within the fruit and vegetables and the pesticides. So, Simon, you're actually, you know, going to the market thinking you're smelling something great. And if you look up in the corner, I guess they're putting in sprays in corners. You have to now look for it to see if it's Memorex or is it the real deal.
Yeah. I think of the gall of people in the factory farmed animal business who just spray their animals in the morning with pesticides. I mean, you know, can you imagine getting them spraying your dog with pesticides? Well, I mean, the cruelty to spraying an animal pesticides, now they're getting the nerve up to get up and just spray humans with scents to try to get them to do what they want to do. I mean, what's next? I mean, I think
I love to sit outside and read. And finally I get too hot, I come inside, and Jan is cooking something in the kitchen, and I go, wow, that smells wonderful. That's what I want to smell. I don't want to be sprayed with artificial broccoli.
Well, how do you know that Jan isn't in there just spraying a can so you're convinced she's fixing you lunch? I mean, you know, that's about where things are in this world, you know?
Now, I keep her on a tight leash.
Yeah, well, those of us who know Jan know it's actually the other way around. But, you know, but seriously speaking, you know, that is a problem. The industry now will just do anything. And that anything includes, as we just said, they'll spray you. They'll do anything to you to get you to buy food. What are they going to think of next? You know, maybe we'll slip some drugs in it. Maybe we'll put a little hash or marijuana into samples, pass them out so the time you get to the third aisle, you're ordering everything in the store. I mean, where does this stop?
Right. Little hash brownies right by the snack aisle.
Actually, it sounded like a movie, Little Hash Brownie. But, no, I think that is a problem. Ash, do you have a comment?
Well, actually, I wanted to get back to yeast for just a moment because it's such an important subject that I don't want to drift too far away from it. One of the things that I wanted to say just briefly is that yeast is common in the environment. And it's called an isolated sugar-rich material, and it's examples are it can occur naturally on the skins of fruits and berries and apples and peaches and various things. It can appear in yeast, can be in soil and insects. Again, it's a fungus. There's 1,500 different species of this fungus. So when people are looking at yeast and saying, I've cut all the yeast out of my diet, they also need to look at, say, if they have overripe fruit and veggies sitting on their counter. Those that overripe fruits and vegetables will also contain yeast. Pickled fruit and vegetables will have it, vinegars, alcohol. There's a whole list of things that when people are doing what we classically call an elimination diet, and if they're trying to eliminate yeast, definitely go on the internet, look up yeast, find all the fruits and vegetables and everything that could be related to yeast, so that you can eliminate that as one of the eliminations to see whether or not you're having problems. Like one writer had written into a site, which I also found interesting, because this one, I never thought of this one, Simon. This guy goes in and he gets a hepatitis B shot. Well, what it did is awakened his allergies. He thought it was the wheat and the gluten intolerance, but it turned out that it was this yeast, and the yeast was coming from the hepatitis B shot. So he broke out in massive eczema, major part of his whole body, and nobody put any relationship between the yeast in the vaccine, the yeast that he was getting in his vitamins and minerals, because it's an inert excipient, except it's thrown into everything, according to the FDA, quite okay. So when people are doing this, they may find that they have added illnesses and intolerances and don't realize that it's actually coming from yeast within the substance that they're eating.
Well, let's add some more to that yeast conversation. How about your favorite hungry man meal, Simon, that we come back to every once in a while? Those meals, if you look at a frozen food, all of them contain large amounts of yeast. Usually it's called autolyzed yeast. Well, what the heck is autolyzed yeast? It is a form of synthetic yeast. It's not natural yeast. So basically, everyone who eats frozen foods are eating some form of yeast in the food that they're eating. And it is used throughout that. Worse than that, as I point out, yeast is often used to make, among other things, MSG. So what they do is they make the MSG out of this synthetic yeast.
In a vat. Caustically made, yes. Yep. Skim it off the top, and there you go.
And what do they do next? They basically don't put MSG on the label. They just say basically autolyzed yeast. So people don't realize that they're eating not only yeast, but MSG. So basically, when you look at these frozen foods, as we point out, Hungry Man has, I believe it's over 150 items in it. You'll find a large amount of those are in some way related to yeast.
And it's vital for that seller to put that in there, because if they don't put that in there, they have nothing to stimulate your appetite center to make you eat the garbage. I'm sorry, did I say that?
Yeah. And by the way, why are they putting smells in the produce section that in our childhood smelled so wonderful? It's because genetically modified foods, particularly the ones you find in your stores, have no smell. They have no taste. They're just garbage. So to enhance shopping and other things, they have to resort to chemical ingredients to stimulate you to buy their junk. And that's exactly what it is, junk.
And then they will protect themselves. The various food industry will come back and say exactly what I said. Yeast is common. It's in the environment. It's part of this isolated sugar material. It's part of everything. So, therefore, it's completely safe. But they take out of that element, this is synthetic. We've really done no testing on the synthetic. We have no idea how this is going to balance out in your body. And one of the things that absolutely, Simon, this got me, because this really, really bothered me. In April of this year, some scientists came across and they said many of the genes that cause human diseases have parallel genes in other organisms, including yeast. So they're studying diseases based on yeast. Now, they have a parallel gene to the human, yet we're putting this synthetic yeast, which we have not, it's not been, it's GMO, so therefore, you know, just put it in. No testing done on it from what I could see, and if it is, please let listeners send me the test, because you've got this human diseases are caused by parallel genes, and you're saying it includes yeast, and yeast is going into everything. Isn't that 1 + 1?
Right, but what bothers me, and I'm going to use Hungry Man as my example, right? Let's assume that Simon decides to create his own, frozen dinner, and it's going to be really simple. It's going to be called meat and potatoes, and the ingredients are meat and potatoes. I don't list the ingredients as potatoes, meat, potatoes, meat, potatoes, 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 but
that's exactly what we're seeing with Hungry Man, and you know, I really shouldn't pick on them, because it's true for all of the products. Rather than just say potatoes, they say flaked potatoes, potatoes maybe from Idaho, one potato from somewhere else, potato byproducts, potato juice, aroma of potato skin. I mean, it's stupid. Why can't they just say MSG or yeast? No, it'd be too simple.
No, the problem is people wouldn't buy it if it said MSG. So what it amounts to is, if you tell the truth, people don't buy your product. So what do? They don't tell the truth. They lie.
And plus, Simon, if you saw on a package, this package said on it, since we now know, we've discussed the fact that this comes from the kingdom of fungi, if it said yeast fungi, fungi yeast, yeast 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 fungi, fungi 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 fungi, fungi chemical MSG, would you buy that product?
Oh, I'd be standing in line.
So they change the name, they trick the brain, they take care of all the surrounding smell aroma by all these food additive flavors, and then what? You know, and people go to the doctor then and say, "Doc, I'm really sick. I'm eating this meal, I'm falling over, I can't understand why. Well, here, take this pill." "Oh, you're still falling over, you're still sick, and now you're sicker because now you have 60 side effects. Take this pill." So instead of going back and saying, what made me sick to begin with, and looking at every time I eat this dinner, I get sick. For me, every time I go out to that restaurant, I eat that bread, I get sick. I get tired, I can barely get out of the chair, I want to go to sleep.
Yeah, she's really quite boring, actually. Yeah. She has dinner, she falls over in her chair, doesn't even drink, I have to take her home. No, but
I drink my yeast and go to sleep. There you go, that's the new sleeping pill. Eat your bread and go to sleep.
and if we think we're exaggerating, we're not. I mean, recently we've been counseling a number of people who've had these reactions. They go to the doctor, the doctor looks at them like, "Oh, I don't know," because they have no clue what's causing the problem.
Because the industry has done a great job of hiding it. And then you get ridiculous statements that come out. Again, you know, this is yeast isn't everything, so therefore it's safe. And
well,
people don't look at it and don't have allergy tests done, and it's really important. See Dr. Dantini, Sage, down in Florida. That's a great one.
Well, you know, and it's funny, the same doctor who talked about his new book on Bill Maher and how all of these things are going on in terms of meals and food. And he's against factory farmed meats all. In fact, he said he just doesn't eat any kind of meat anymore because he's so distressed about where it comes from. But when you listen to him talk and you listen to all the different things that are going on with this, you find yourself saying, here's a head of a college area that talks about the dishonesty of how this news is perpetuated, how they tell these stories, and how basically science, in fact, he said, "I've been where science and politics meet, and it's not pretty." Well, we're going to get into that in a couple minutes and discuss why it's not pretty, but this is where it shows up more, is on the ingredients label, where basically high-powered graduates from major schools are hired every day to find out a way to write something that deceives the general public. And I'm ashamed of these young college graduates. If your calling in life is go to work for a major corporation and practice the art of lying to the American public, why did you go to college? What did you learn there? What are these schools teaching? What are they doing that's turning out this level of corrupt student? And how did we get to where we are? Well, I think we're going to start that with a story that Ashley likes to talk about, which is sort of the origin of this drug problem, which goes back to the Rockefellers and the Trust, and really the true politics of how this food gets there. So, Ashley, tell us a little bit about how this vaccine story started with the Rockefellers.
Well, it started in Mexico City, where there was a Eugene Labar, and he took a bus into New York. And on the way in, on March 10th, 1947, he was taken into the hospital. He was diagnosed with hemorrhagic bronchitis, and the man died on April 10th. So then, Senior Labar, during a long trip, had been in the same atmosphere as thousands of other people. Oh my gosh, there could be smallpox there. Let's do a smallpox scare. So then we have the publicity loving mayor, William Dyer, back in New York, who said in 1947, he starts off saying that that this was all then related to going into, it was the Rockefeller at this point, right, Manny, that came in and said, oh, well, you know, this is a scare, everybody, there's smallpox. This man's been in New York. Run, run, run. We've got to get a vaccine. We've got to get a vaccine, get everybody vaccinated. They did a big PR thing to get everybody in to get this vaccine of smallpox. And then they had a lot of deaths off of this, didn't they, Manny?
Yep.
You're better off telling the story.
Well, no, I'm not better off telling this story. Again, my wife is dumping this on me. This is one of your favorite stories, not mine. And basically, I don't remember how many people have died, but they estimated the industry made about $15 million on it. It cost the city of New York, I think it was about $800,000, which, of course, went to the drug companies. And at the end of the day, everybody made a huge amount of money, and a whole bunch of people died. And I'm trying to remember the number, but it was somewhere around 30 or 40. But can you imagine $850,000 in 1947 would probably be the equivalent of about $20 million right now. Could you imagine if the city of New York spent $20 million to vaccinate its citizens and 30 or 40 of them died, and they found out the drug company made, well, that $15 million they made in 47 would be about $250 million now. Do you think the city wouldn't sue them? Of course they would. But in 1947, there was no one more powerful in the state of New York and the city of New York than the Rockefeller family.
And the number of deaths, the death toll during that time period was just horrible. And they had a doctor that stepped up who proceeded to say he was part of the, he was president of the National Chiropractic Association, who stepped up to the plate and was honest about it. He said, my honest opinion is that the vaccination was the cause of more disease and suffering than anything he could name. He believed that it caused diseases such as cancers, vaccines were causing syphilis, cold sores, other diseases, conditions, and yet the state of Virginia and many other states and parents were compelled to continue to give their children this during that time period. So it was interesting how the Rockefellers took this one man who had hemorrhagic bronchitis and turned it into a smallpox scare to get everybody to take their vaccine.
And let's project it up to now. We've all seen this controversy with a group of parents led by, I think, Christy Brinkley, that are claiming their children have autism as a result of these childhood vaccinations. And when you read the various reporting and the press, how the government and the manufacturers feel this is nonsense, it seemed like kind of a stretch to me until I read this article that basically said children now are getting 33 to 36, usually an average of 34, vaccines for childhood illnesses between birth and a couple years old. My God, I mean, I didn't even have, the polio vaccine didn't come out till I was 8 or 9. I had a smallpox vaccine, which actually is a scratch on your arm, but I didn't have any of those things, and I think I had a measles shot. So in my generation, you had 2 or 3 shots. I wouldn't give my child 34 shots. I remember when my children were born, my children are in their 40s now, I think there are only 3 or 4 vaccines in their time in the 60s. But to give a child 0 to 2 years old 34 shots of untested vaccines, ones that have yeast products, synthetic yeast products, and all these unproven items that are basically pushed by drug manufacturers, many with false reports and a lot of pressure on the government, is causing a great many of these childhood illnesses. And I ask every parent who listens to this show, would you give your child voluntarily 30-plus shots? I mean, a child is so vulnerable between 0 and 2 years old. I mean, Simon, you have a daughter. Can you imagine giving her 34 shots between 0 and a couple years old?
No, and you know, I'm thinking back to, you know, my youth. You're right. It was three or four vaccines. That was it. I mean, why do we need all of these others?
No, because it's profitable.
Right. Look at the dollar signs. It has nothing to do with the health of the child, but the health of the bottom line.
Oh, absolutely. And let's get there. How did they get away with this? Well, we've written an article, two of them, though, that I think are really interesting, interesting for our readers. After the show, they can go to Blogger News and look up peer-reviewed publications, or our Politics Dominate the FDA articles will give you all the stats and detailed information. But two of the studies we cite, one in 2011 and the other 1996, say that most medical research articles are written by ghostwriters working for the food and drug manufacturers for profit motives. And they reported a admitted ghostwriting rate, where people actually admitted they were ghostwriting for products, at 7.9% of the reports in JAMA, which is a Journal of American Medical Association, 7.6% in The Lancet, which is the Canadian version of that, and PLOS, which is a large population of articles for general doctors, 7.6%, and 15.3% in the New England Journal of Medicine, which, of course, is the one related to Harvard. No surprise, because, as we point out, more than 1,500 doctors at Harvard admitted to accepting money and having conflicts of interest with drug and food companies. So the end result is there's this culture of dishonesty that started with the Rockefellers, because, Ashley, if I recall, you've gone through that. Ashley gave me this wonderful book to read, written by a old publisher. He was a newspaper publisher in Virginia named Morris Beale, B-E-A-L-E, and he wrote a book called The Drug Story. And it just exposes how the Rockefellers spend millions on bribing medical schools to sell drugs, to get their drug company stuff sold. Because you have to remember, the Rockefeller Trust own probably 30% of every drug company around the United States and are actively involved in this, as well as partnering with Bill Gates' charity on GMO foods abroad. So, Ashley, tell us a little bit about your opinions about the drug story and what you learned about the politics of food from this older book.
Well, I found it very interesting. It's by Morris A. Beale, and we talk about this, as you said, Manny, the drug story. It's actually out of print, and it's a book that I would suggest anybody having any questions at all about the drug industry or anybody in the medical field should absolutely read this story. Old Bill, who was John D. Rockefeller's dad,
son. He is the brother of John D. Rockefeller Jr., the son of Rockefeller. The John Rockefeller you're talking about is the grandson, his successor.
Old Bill. Okay.
He is the son of Rockefeller.
Well, he was a clever guy because he had all this Standard Oil. So what are you going to do when it's, you know, in the 1800s and you got the Standard Oil and you got all this stuff laying around, and how are you going to sell it? So he said, okay, let's bottle this petroleum. We're going to call it NuJoule, N-U-J-O-L, and it means new oil. He sold it to everybody as a cancer cure. And this sounded good to Standard's researcher, and it sounded better when they could charge everybody $2 a barrel to concoct this NuJoule from crude petroleum. So then he started selling this by the barrel, raw stuff for cancer. And people started getting sick, and they were having problems with it. But you know what? It was sold in a brown bottle. No one knew what it was, and there you go. You fast forward a little bit. When they started being able to check it, and they were checking the drug, they said, you know what? This doesn't have any beta carotene in it. So what do you think he did, Simon?
I just stuck some in.
There you go. Continue producing it. So then we fast forward, there is a whole story about how during the war, World War II, he was worried about losing his firm and losing his you know, big making money, and so they decided they were going to move this building over, they would move this pharmaceutical company, making it out of oil, and they're going to move the NuJoule over to Germany. So he buddies up with the Nazis. This is a good thing to do, right? Buddy up, be real safe, you know, because these are definitely where we know they're going to win. So he puts the building over there, and then the flyboys going over were given specific instructions to never bomb that building. So everything around the building in Germany was destroyed by that pharmaceutical company.
Wow.
Yep, and the same could be said of Bayer. As a matter of fact, as a punishment to Bayer after World War II, they were stripped of all of their patents to basically aspirin and all the related items. But in all fairness to Bayer, let's put this in proper perspective. BMW made Messerschmitt's ice airplanes. Porsche made the Jeeps that they were used. BMW and another company made the tanks the same way. Those of us who have Mitsubishi TVs need to stop and remember once in a while that Mitsubishi made the Zero aircraft that was so effective in attacking American forces. My brother, who was a veteran of Iwo Jima, would roll over in his grave if he knew I had a product made by Mitsubishi. And so there's a lot of this going on, but let's not kid ourselves. People like even the famous aviator Lindbergh was a Nazi sympathizer, and his wife wrote articles in support of the Nazis, and a lot of his business interests were with the Nazis. And I think that he was somewhat disappointed that we won the war at times, sad as that may be. But this is part of our heritage, but it pours over into the foods and products that we eat every day. So if you're going to be dishonest during a time of war when you should be a patriot, what would you do for money when there's no war going on? Well, just about anything, it seems. So.
And the list of companies in this whole beginning of this book, it's really worth, if anybody out there wants to get a hold of this, it's worth reading this book. It just, the history of this man is just, it's despicable.
Let's move.
And the list of people, I mean, the Dow, and I mean, Bristol-Myers, like you're saying, the amount of cosmetic companies and the number of companies that are attached to this whole thing and going back to World War II is pretty frightening.
Well, let's go to one of Simon's favorites, which is beer. And by the way, I like it too, Simon. And
good old German beer.
A little German beer. I love that German beer and Austrian beer, et cetera. But I'm not crazy about American beer. And one of the reasons is recently I took a look at the Budweiser can. Now Budweiser actually puts on their can, you know, genuine Iowa corn. Well, genuine Iowa corn means they're buying corn from their partner, Monsanto's, of various farmers and other people, and they're basically putting genetically modified corn is being used to brew beer. But if that disturbs you, consider that now the yeast is genetically modified. So here you've got beer made from substandard corn
with
bacteria and viruses that is being sold as genetically or sold as high grade beer, but the hops and the barley and everything are also genetically modified. So I look at this and I ask myself, do I really want to have a Budweiser? Well, for years the answer has been no, because I thought they've been making substandard beer that people usually refer to Mindu as some form of urine water, because I'm sure you've heard that expression.
Oh, honey, Simon. You should have told the people that were making Premarin. You could have used it as the Premarin hormone.
Yeah. So I guess if you dissolve Budweiser beer in a glass of water, it smells like horse urine the way Premarin does. I don't know.
We're just kidding, but
it's
equally as bad. I mean, it's really bad.
No, I think it's disgusting that an American manufacturer with that kind of background would use these kind of products and adulterated their beer. When you look at the tradition of the Bush family and their knowledge of brewing, they know what they're doing. It's strictly on the cheap. But in all fairness to the Bush family, recently they sold out to BevMo, which is a Dutch company, which I think will probably do a better job of making their beer than they do. And that's a sad commentary, isn't it, Simon?
It is. And what bothers me is such a simple ingredient as the hop. The hop has a huge amount to do with the flavor. As a child, as a young adult, I can remember cycling by a real hop farm It was enclosed in nets to keep the birds out. They were hand-picked. But apparently now there's a world shortage of hops. So guess what? Let's GMO them.
Yeah, well, they have been for some time, Simon. And what's more, the industry is so powerful, they got an exemption to use GMO hops in organic beer. So organic beer is adulterated with genetically modified hops also. I mean, that one really frosted me, because that's a true deception on the American public again.
And you know, Simon, it gets back to also, I'm going to repeat something, and I keep repeating, which is, when you put together your elimination diet on what's making you sick, also look at the brand. Because you may, for me, with bread, I'll go back to bread, and the conversation we had earlier with bread, Simon, I can have this organic bread made either at home, or there's a specific organic bread I found with no additives that's at Trader Joe's. Very inexpensive bread. We both of us have zero problem with it because it has no synthetic additives or GMO. So instead of just taking, I can't eat any bread, and this is off all of my list, I went back to the organic, made by God, not by man, made by God, not in a lab. And we have foods that we are able to now digest and eat, because then we can get the nutritive value mixing it also with the enzyme. So it's very healthy for us as opposed to the other that was making us sick. Same with the beer. If you drink a beer, remember the brand. If you drink a few sips of that beer and you want to pass out, you have a serious allergy to that yeast. Serious, serious allergy.
Well, yeah, and again, it's back to balance of trade. What European person would drink American beer based upon the way that it is presently made? And the answer is none of them. So we're now making a beer that we really can't even sell abroad because it's a piece of junk. Well, that's really good for our American balance of payments, isn't it? You know?
Well, I mean, on a simpler note, how many bars of Hershey chocolate do Europeans buy?
Yeah, none.
Oh, Simon, do you know that there's a lot of yeast in some of the chocolate bars?
Oh, don't tell me this.
Sorry to break you the news there. And that's important for people to read ingredients, because you'll find it on the chocolate bars. Some of the chocolate bars are now putting yeast in it, yeast extract, along with their flavors, because it has no flavor.
Yeah, I just have trouble understanding how we got to this point in the society where one day everything we have is going to be synthetic. It's like those sci-fi movies where the guy pushes a button and it goes, gee, do I want grapes, do I want a roast beef sandwich, do I want ice cream? And he goes, oh, I'll have ice cream. And he pushes a button and a pill comes out. No matter what his choice is, a pill comes out.
That would be the pharmacology, big pharma's big dream right there. I bet you that's their dream.
Actually, Manny, something that you've mentioned on other programs, and it just genuinely bothers me. When Mexico says to the U.S., thanks, but no thanks. We really don't want to buy your product. That is something that every American should be really concerned about.
Yeah, and now, I know, and you lived in San Diego for a while, and living in San Diego and the West Coast culture, you know how natives of this part of the country feel about that, because we've dealt so much with Mexico throughout our lives. I mean, Mexico has been a South American, you know, asshole for I don't know how long, and I can say that because I've been going there since my early teens in the mid-50s with my older brothers and vacation there. I fished there. I used to spend a month there every year in my hiatus from practicing law, because there was a time when you couldn't get phone calls in Mexico, which was absolutely ideal for any lawyer who wants to get away. So, you know, at the end of the day, I've spent enough time to know there that the worst thing that comes out of the U.S. is better than anything you eat there. But they don't want genetically modified foods, and they don't want to eat this garbage. So they're exporting fruit, which irritates Ash and I, because we live in the produce capital. Yesterday there was a big article how Oxnard and Ventura County, which is next to us, are now the largest producers of celery in the country, if not the world. So we have all sorts of areas like that. We're the largest strawberry producer in the world. We produce more of certain oranges than even Florida does. So at the end of the day, to realize terrible old Mexico won't buy our food, but we're buying theirs, bringing the United States, selling it in areas where we don't really need their food, frankly, is really galling to me as an American.
Well, yeah. But if you take a step back and you go, why is this happening? And you actually look into it, you go, that's curious. They don't like the genetically modified crap because it's not understood. It's not scientific, if you will. I'm sure that a Monsanto rep is probably listening to us going, what a load of bull. I mean, all of our products have been rigorously, scientifically tested by our paid independent researchers.
Wait, paid, pressured. You got to use the words of the Kenyans and the Tanzania people. Paid, pressured scientific data.
Well, yeah, you were Simon. Let's go farther than that. What's his name? Chappella, the professor at Berkeley, wrote an article about how the little GMO corn that was used in Mexico had contaminated the natural Mexican maize, which is considered a national treasure there, and they suspended and refused to allow any GMO done. So what did Monsanto do? They tried to get him fired from his position at Berkeley as a professor because they resented his article, and they almost succeeded, except the student body just erupted into a huge opposition to Monsanto, and they saved his job. So they never really stop. They just keep right on coming, and if you say anything against them, they'll try to destroy you. And certainly, as you've experienced from the Corn Refiners Association, when they weren't happy with your show, they started writing to you, too. So if anyone who believes that we're being alarmist, go read the studies from this noticed professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and see what he has to say about it, and see whether you feel that we're being we're exaggerating the problem, because you'll be shocked at what he's written about these areas, and you'll be shocked if you read the stories about how Monsanto and tried to silence him. So, coming back to the other side, we're now basically at a point where we can't sell our products anywhere because nobody wants them. Nobody in the United States, if they were properly labeled, would eat them. So, but yet they sell them anyway. So at the end of the day, what we have is a renegade group of corporations forcing Americans to eat food they really don't want to eat, and they're able to get away with it. And that's the politics of food that we're discussing, is Americans don't have freedom of choice. You don't have freedom of choice. And what's worse about it to me is then they work with the retailers. So as you point out, Simon, it's hard for you to buy better quality food where you are because people don't stock it, because they stock what's available from these large companies, and to not buy from them is really asking for a lot of problems because they do retaliate.
Oh, the average store has absolutely no say in it. If you want to stock item X, you also have to give shelf space to Y, Z, and, a dozen other products.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is a common practice through a lot of industries. Do you know in the film industry, frequently, to book one film, you have to agree to book another film you may not want to book. So sometimes films are showing in theaters the distributors don't really want. But sometimes there's a positive effect. There's this wonderful story from my youth where basically nobody wanted to show a movie you probably like called The Ipcress File. Do you remember The Ipcress File?
Yes, I do indeed.
Yeah, a wonderful British film that was Michael Caine's coming out party, if you recall. Well, what happened is Cubby Broccoli, who produced all the Bond films, basically said to distributors, if you want Goldfinger at Christmas, you have to show The Ipcress File. And they balked and they balked, and finally they gave in, because at that time nobody could afford, concerning the success of From Russia With Love, to turn down a Bond film. And guess what? It became a huge hit. Michael Caine became a major star. But for that pressure from Broccoli, that movie would never have been shown in the United States because nobody wanted to show it. And, well, this happens with food. If you want to get the biggest selling item from a company like Kraft or some other food manufacturer, and I don't want to single out Kraft necessarily, you have to stock other products from them because they want their full line. And sometimes that fight for space on the market shelves trumps all the interests of Americans and affects what they eat every day because it's more of a negotiated agreement than it is anything else.
In fact, what people should do is the next time they go to the supermarket, just wander around and look at product placement. And that really says it all.
It does, Simon. And they put a lot of thought even into kids, what kids are going to grab off the shelf. Kid height. They put so much research into getting people to buy that product that it doesn't matter what it is or how unhealthy it is. It's just so it's showed on the proper shelf. That one really upsets me. You know, kids are grabbing just crap off the cereal shelf that, you know, mom gives in because it's a tired, you know, she's a tired day, and it's just really not a good thing.
Yeah.
Right. What you tend to find, or at least this has been my experience, is the dirt cheap stuff will be right down at the bottom. You've got to bend down, you know, and if you're old and cranky like I am, who wants to bend down? You know, the children-friendly stuff is at children height. The stuff that they really want to punt is more at eyeball and arm height for adults. And the good stuff, but more expensive, is always on the top shelf, hard to get at.
Well, you know, Simon, let me throw this story in. I was an undergrad in business and marketing, and I went to work for a subsidiary of a publicly traded company doing marketing, and I did 3 years of international marketing and other things before I went to law school. So here I was right out of college in the 60s, you know, 21, 22 years old, and they assigned a mentor to me, a 50-odd-year-old guy. I had an MBA from Cornell and undergrad from Harvard, and he was as sharp a marketer as I've ever seen. So the first thing he does is drag me to a market, and he walks down the center aisle and goes, look at these, all these products on the edge of the aisle, not on the shelves, but facing the aisle. He said, look at this one. Kraft won this political battle to get this on this corner. Oop, you know, General Mills won this one. Look at this product. And he would sit down and name the different ones and how each one won the battle to get that product at the end of the aisle. But by the time that we got to the end of the market, you know, the center aisle of the market, he said, you can see who has the most political juice by how well they're positioned. Like some people want to be next to the ice cream section, some want to be this, and they try to place their food at the end of the aisle that they believe has the maximum foot travel. And he said, you can tell these manufacturers, and he pointed out a few whose names don't recall, who don't have the political juice, and guess what? They're down here by the soaps and the other items that get less food traffic. And he would walk up and down, and I spent quite a bit of time walking up down the aisles, went from Market to the old White Front, which is sort of like a Walmart now, and other ones, and he taught me the practical things of how people fought for space, how he goes, look at this aisle. See this product here in red? This is red because everyone else was using a blue, so they changed their label to red so it would stick out. And he analyzes like a doctor would an X-ray. So people who walk up and down the market don't think about it. But I guarantee you, everybody in the business thinks about every foot, linear and vertical, as they walk. walk down that aisle.
It's complete manipulation to me.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And Cornell University did extensive studies on this. I found it interesting a while back. I was reading some student who decided they were going to run an experiment on their friends just on a shape of a bowl. Who was going to eat more Fritos, or which bowl would be more would be eaten, this shape or the Frito bowl or that? And he put them out, and he didn't say a word, and consistently everybody went to this particular shape of bowl. So right down to the shape and every single line on that package has been done to manipulate somebody to buy that product. Has nothing to do with somebody's health.
You know, and it's funny, in my life, one of the reasons this company hired me is that I've gone to college on an arts scholarship. I was a fine arts painter who then decided I could make a living. And truthfully, one day I got up and understood why Van Gogh cut off his ear and moved on. But they were fascinated by the fact that I had so much knowledge and experience, basically in color, so they could talk to me about package colors. And I spent close to a year studying package colors and what influenced people to buy packaged foods off the shelf. And so this is how sophisticated they are. But at the end of the day, we are the consumer, and in our lives, we can only handle this problem by voting with a checkbook. And one of the things we always try to remind people at the end of our show is to join the food revolution. It's simple. Read the labels, reject foods with chemical additives, ask for free-range, free meat, avoid genetically modified foods, and vote with your checkbook. If you read something with 150 ingredients, don't buy it. If you don't buy it, your friends don't buy it, and other people in the store don't buy it, they won't stock it. And sooner or later, people get a message. Already, the movement has influenced Hunt's to take high fructose corn syrup out of ketchup. Coke and Pepsi are starting to remove high fructose corn syrup. Gatorade has a variety of different companies, Sara Lee Foods. And remember that if you take a stand like this, the way we have and others like us have, and you join this, you can change the quality of the food in your market, you can change the quality of food your children eat, and you can extend your own life and improve the health of your children. People say to me sometimes organic food is expensive. I got news for you. Doctor's visits, x-rays, treatment, and staying home from work for weeks at a time and suffering are far more expensive than what you'll spend on organic food. And in the end, you eat less of the organic food, and if you shop carefully, it should cost you no more. But if you don't read these labels, and you don't look at these ingredients, and you don't know it's in your food, then I guess what? It's like going to a tasting and people saying, I want you to eat the next 9 food items of food, but I'm not going to tell you what's in it, and one of them may have arsenic in it, and if you eat it, oh well. Well, that's what happens when you go to the market. You're buying foods, you don't know what's in it, you don't read the labels, you don't understand what's in it, and maybe it doesn't have arsenic. But I guarantee you the tests will show it has a ticking time bomb, and if you eat enough of it, that time bomb will go off in your body. You'll have heart problems, you'll have kidney problems, you'll have liver problems, a million possible allergies, and guess what? You look, pick up the obituary column every day, and you'll see people dying far too young of cancer, breast cancer in women, prostate cancer in men, all these things that didn't happen before the mid-90s, and none of these statistics existed before genetically modified food and all of these chemicals. Simon, I'm going to leave it to you to give some end words to us, because you're in this about 6-8 months now, and you've been doing your own research, your own reading, and I think you're convinced now that the people who don't switch and get away from all these chemicals are really hurting themselves. So do you have any final thoughts for us?
Oh, there is no doubt in my mind. People need to put their brain in gear when they're shopping. If you don't have access to organic markets, all is not lost. You can find decent food in every supermarket. My simple advice: stay on the outside of the of all of the aisles. The closer to the middle you get, the worse it becomes. Yeah, you have to do something though, because what is happening in the country at the moment is we're seeing a huge increase in cancer and other diseases that really didn't exist 20 years ago. Is that a fair statement, Marion Ashley?
Absolutely. All of this has started since the influx of all this adulterated food. And for those people who want more organic, some better quality food, there are a lot of online sites you can go to. Plug in your zip code. It'll tell you the nearest farmer's market, the nearest organic stores.
You can even ask for foods by request, whatever brand it is you want. Some of them will give you the brand, and then you put your zip code in, and then you can find whatever it is you're looking for, and usually within a close proximity of your home. You'll be surprised at how much is available.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised when you go to your market. If you start requesting things, you will be surprised at how many things show up in your market. And it has worked consistently with both of us. And we've been doing it for many, many years now. And what also happens is you are doing that market and somebody else in your neighborhood a favor. And that favor is by asking for that organic and starting to demand healthier food in your market for you and your family and future generations, others will benefit as well. So not only are you helping yourself, but you're also helping others, which is a very, very good thing to do. And you are educating that grocer who doesn't know. A lot of these grocers are becoming more and more aware, but some of them just don't know. So if you take your information into that market and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for, can I get this? You're going to do yourself a good favor, your family a good favor, and others as well.
And I'll end with this thought. For those of our listeners who spend time on the computer to find exotic glues, games, things on eBay, anything they want to buy, those people can find food, organic and otherwise, just as easily. And Ashley did a great job replacing all of the spices on our shelf with organic spices. And when she couldn't find what she wanted, guess what? Ashley went on the Internet, found it, and then basically what she did is had it delivered. So when she couldn't find a particular pepper or something she wanted, guess what? It was the easiest way was to just have it ordered and sent to your house. And
again, with the spices, Europe is not buying a lot of our spices because it is filled with pesticides and or using GMO. Spices have been around for centuries and centuries and thousands of years. Each spice has got a specific to it, like turmeric for anti-inflammatory. There are things within the spices that can help your cooking and your organic cooking to help heal yourself. But it will not be a healer if you're going to use something that's filled with pesticides that are going to cause you to have cancer.
So to end the show, we wish you all great health. We hope you'll tune in on Saturday because Saturday's show is titled At the Movies. We're going to go to the movies.
Oh, I can't wait. We're going to do fun stuff Saturday.
We're going to buy some buttered popcorn, some candy, and some soft drinks, and we're going to blow the whistle on what's in there. And when you hear Ashley's discussion of this synthetic butter they put in your popcorn...
Ooh, don't spoil it. Well, wait.
I'm not going to spoil it, but you need to know what goes on your popcorn, you know? And I guess you could say the magic question is, do you know where your buttered popcorn has been? Tune in Saturday and listen to Surviving the 21st Century on this station. And Simon, and we're going to talk about food on Saturday.
And I do want to just give you guys a quick plug for listeners that are interested in getting more information from Manny and Ashley. Please go to their website, howtoeliminatepain.com. Their books are well worth reading, and there is a new book in the works. I think it's scheduled for a mid-September release. Am I correct there?
That's correct. The Food Revolution Papers, which are 40 articles on food. It's a type of book you can put on the airplane next to you or in the bathroom next to you and read short articles from everything from genetically modified food to the politics we discuss. We hope it's going to help educate everybody in a way they can read very easily. And, of course, because they're articles, you can skip around the book so you're not forced to read the beginning, the middle, and the end. You can start at the end and read backwards if you want, whatever you want to do. So please tune in.
And I recommend that you skip the beginning because
You were threatening to use one of mine at the beginning.
We do like to threaten you.
We do like to threaten you, Simon.
Okay, we need to wrap this up. So, till Saturday, this is Manny, Ashley, and Simon wishing everyone a happy and safe, healthy day. We'll talk to you again Saturday. Till then, goodbye.